And welcome to the program on this Monday. This is Weather and Ag in Focus. I'm meteorologist Justin Storm alongside Ag Director Bridget Riedel. And, well, Dean Wysocki's still missing somewhere off a hiking trail in Arizona. So we wish him the best.
A little MIA. He's out there somewhere.
Says he's out there doing it.
He's enjoying it. So yeah, he's all good.
It's, what was it, 113 the other day in old Arizona, Phoenix. That's a good
day
for
them.
That
is not weather for you and I. That's not what we're in it for.
No, it's a little warm for me. The weekend was a little warm for me.
88. So how many records did we set?
Well, I don't think we set a record here in Fargo, but out in western North Dakota, they set several records. A lot of towns broke their all-time record. Four of the five climate sites ended up setting records yesterday in the 90s. If, I don't remember exactly what the town was. I have to go back and check. But there were a couple spots I thought that hit 80, 96, 97, maybe a 98-degree day out there yesterday. While we were flirting with 90, we were stuck in the 80s here in the valley. But regardless, nice day yesterday. A little breezy, though. Did you have a good weekend, Bridget?
Okay. A lot of breezy. You got that right. That was a holy cow, tie your hair back type of day. My question would be, though, did that set any records? Okay. I'm done. Okay. Did that set any records for the latest 90 degree temperature we've had in North Dakota? Does that question make sense?
Yeah. Man, I don't have the answer for that right off the top of my head. With the data I've
That's
seen,
fair.
I'd have to go back and look at a lot of the other stations out there, but, I would assume no, I don't believe that is. That would be my first inkling would be to say no, but I'd have to go and check through all the other weather sites through central and western North Dakota, really give you a firm answer on that.
It's totally fair that I can't possibly request everything right off the top of your head, but it just,
right.
As we were talking about
I mean, the record is 90. The record is 90 here in Fargo, so it's been 90 degrees later in the year than yesterday, I guess, technically for the state. And I know that there are a couple of 90-degree days that have happened in Fargo in October. So it's about that first week of October. Then I think after that it drops down into the 80s. One thing I mean, we'll be keeping an eye on here in Cass County is we might set a record for the longest we've gone or the latest first frost for Cass County, which I believe is the 12th of October. And right now, if everything plays out the way it should, we wouldn't see that until the 13th of October.
Who has been on team November 1st all the way along? That would be me. And I'm going to get close. Yeah, I might get close to that. Although, you know, a month ago, I was very concerned that if we would have had a frost like we typically do closer to the time that of Big Iron, you know, like the week after Labor Day, had that happened, I was very concerned we'd have a lot of corn that didn't make maturity and we'd be firing up grain dryers left and right and moving a lot of propane. We're not there. People are finding that crop is drying down pretty quickly. Tomorrow, full campaign is supposed to start for sugar beets so that we can start the full harvest and lift. Hopefully you have signed up for your time to go ride with the sugar beets guys just south of Grand Forks, Justin. But nonetheless, we actually may have to flirt with the idea of if it gets too warm, you get shut down for heat. And that could happen.
Very well may. What's that threshold there, Bridget? Is it anything over 60 degrees you don't want to move beets in or 50?
No, it's higher than that. I think it's 75. Oh. And I will ask one of our faithful listeners, Chad. He's a farm manager up south of Buxton or near Buxton Reynolds. Chad, if you recall, I think you can message me that. But I think it's 75 is when they start to get concerned. And it has to do with the root temperature of the beets as well. So there'll be some things to keep in mind there. You don't want to pile warm beets. I mean, it sounds unappetizing to begin with.
Is that tomorrow? Today or next Tuesday?
Tomorrow.
Oh, all right. Well, they're moving beets tomorrow. No problem about that.
let's get you signed up so you can go out and run a machine. Or at least hang out in one.
I have to do that for sure. Got to find some availability. I've just been swamped busy for the last week. And then Dean took off.
Take your little guy with you, because who's not going to enjoy that more? You or him, or who would enjoy it more? I think the two of you would really have a pretty good time hanging out in the buddy seat, whether you're in the lifter or the topper.
Yeah, I think he'd like watching. I think he'd get a little skittish inside the machine.
Hanging out in the cab?
He might. If you tell him something's going to be loud, he's fine with it. But if he's like doesn't know what's coming, or if it's too much, he kind of wants to get away from the loud noises.
Good news. Pack cab snacks. That keeps everybody's interest at peak attention, including mine. Sure does. So all those cab snack ideas for your lunch boxes, send them my way. I'm all for packing good lunches.
Well, hey, we got some fun things coming up on the program today. We'll be running down your forecast, let you know what the week ahead's going to look like and when this darn wind is going to shut off or go somewhere else. This doesn't bother me. I'm indoors most of the day, but I know it's kind of annoying when you step outside of what we got for our ag topics today. Military and farmers, the true cost on a dairy farm, and as well as Wyoming wildfire recovery efforts. And you heard on ABC News, they were talking about a fire that re-sparked up over in California. And at this point, I'm just surprised, Bridget. I mean, you hear California is on fire every single year. You think at some point everything would have just burnt up and there'd be nothing left to burn.
There's always dry brush that's still available.
I suppose.
And I look at the fact that you have areas in California that realistically probably shouldn't have homes in them because they're built far out into the underbrush, et cetera, areas that are pretty heavily forested. And without a regular fire, all of that dry kindling just builds up. So you probably don't hear as much about a fire unless somehow it's got property damage to it, like personal property. But nonetheless, California's big long state. There's always areas every year that can have a fire. And right now, I don't know if I should worry more about fires out to the west, or let's look at some of the agricultural production that's going to be affected post Hurricane Helene. That's going to be huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, down there they got a. So this was actually a question that came up last week when Helene was making landfall, and that is with the storm surge that comes inland. How does land behave? Agricultural land behave and handle the deposits of salt from saltwater being flooded over fields? Does that obviously
not well.
You're changing the solidity of the soil, but how does that affect a crop and whatnot?
Oh, I think the bigger question is how do you get rid of it once it's there? Because actually, I've got a story, and I think it's for next week. Let me look. Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit more next week in the state of Maryland, where they are seeing more inland flooding coming along. And once that happens, and just like what you're talking about with Helene, that salt comes in and washes over the land and leaves deposits. That salty soil is not good for growing a crop because it's effectively changed it. Nothing really grows there. When you drive through areas of North Dakota and you see fields that have that white spot at the end of a field, those are high salt areas, and you'll notice very little tends to grow there. That'll be the case with a lot of this land production as well. Of greater concern for me right now would be the hog and poultry facilities without power and probably without water. Because those are climate controlled barns. If you can open them up and you can get animals outside to fresh air, that's awesome. But some of them are not built that way. And if that is indeed the case, you're now going to run the risk of losing so many animals. Again, could be poultry, could be hog operations that are mostly in barn confinement. If that's the case, we could see a pretty big spike in some of our grocery store costs later this year. You know, that Christmas ham might cost you a little bit more just because supply will be down. We don't have any accurate numbers on that as of yet, but I do know that there's some pretty high numbers of pork production that happen in the Carolinas and Georgia. So we'll keep an eye out for that as the fall goes along.
All things you really don't think about in terms of natural disasters is how does it affect the food chain, and at least maybe I should say food chain, but food production and whatnot. It's a good thing we have a lot of birds up here.
It's helpful. Minnesota is one of the largest turkey producer.
Yeah. And then I don't know where like the Carolinas, the Southeast, how they rank in terms of hog and poultry production, but I don't know if you happen to have an idea.
I'm going to go see if I can find one. Do you want to run down the weather while I do that?
Sure thing. We can do that. Wendy, back to you, Bridget.
Nice. No. Thanks, Justin.
It's windy out there. We'll see wind gusting upwards of 40 miles an hour right now currently here in the area. And it's going to gust as high as 50 across the region. This is all behind a cold front that swung through earlier this morning. So we had south winds that have now switched out of the northwest. And temperatures holding fairly steady in those upper 60s right now. And we'll see them holding fairly steady in the upper 60s throughout most of the rest of the day. There is a little bit of rain out there, mainly over into Minnesota, a couple sprinkles in the valley, but we'll basically just be watching these partly cloudy and sunny skies throughout the rest of the day. There's a few more clouds up in the northern half of the state. Those are going to funnel down towards the southern valley this afternoon. All in all, not too bad of a day today. It's just going to be blustery. Tonight, mainly clear down to a low in the mid-40s, and as we head through tomorrow, we'll bounce back into the mid-60s, which is where we should be for most part for this time of the year. Our average daytime high is 65, our average daytime low is 42, and we'll just kind of see temperatures bouncing around through the rest of the week. Wednesday, we're back in the mid-70s. It is breezy. Thursday, the winds lighten up, but we'll drop down to the mid-60s. We're back right around 70 on Friday, and into the weekend, the wind returns. We'll have temperatures in the 70s on Saturday and low 60s on Sunday. So kind of bouncing around all over the place, generally, with an exception for Thursday and Friday. It's just going to be a breezy week and dry as well.
I think dry people are okay with for the most part right now. So that's going well. I can now answer your question about hog production. And in the U.S., the top hog producing state is Iowa, followed by Minnesota. North Carolina would be third in hog production. Iowa beats them by about four times the volume. Nonetheless, North Carolina, that is still significant to the overall U.S. production. When it comes to poultry producing states, Georgia, Alabama, Arkansas, and North Carolina are the top four in poultry production. So that would include chickens, turkeys as well. So bear that in mind. That will make a difference to us in some pricing later this year, I think. We'll watch for it.
All right. Get ready for $12 dozen eggs again, folks. You thought we were out of the woods? Well, I guess maybe not quite eek. There. Eek. Yeah, eek or chirp. Yeah. All right. Well, let's see. What do we got coming up on the course of the afternoon today? We got some guests that'll be joining us today. That's Brad Hines from the University of Minnesota Morris, was it, Bridget?
Yes, he is. And Brad is coming to us to talk about a project that's going on at the University of Minnesota Morris, where they're mixing cows with solar panels. And it's the largest agrivoltaic pasture. That's not easy to say, but I bet Brad can say it a lot more smoothly than you and I can. So we will talk with Brad when we return. So stay tuned for that discussion. And good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for being here for Weather and Ag in Focus. And if you are looking to join all of us as on-air folks one day soon, well, come join us on Saturday, October 12th. We will be hosting Beer Fest. And what's two of our favorite things on this show? Beer and beef. So this is right up our alley. This will be sponsored by Shiner, Linacoogan, Castle Danger, and Voodoo Ranger. There'll be beers to sample, Stein hoisting contest, darts. I'm going to call it bean bags. I hate the term cornhole. And then we can watch the Bison play. And you can do that starting at 11 a.m. Again, that's Saturday, October 12th. And that will be at Fargo Billiards. So come hang out with us. We'd appreciate it. I don't know about you, Justin. I just can't use the term cornhole.
Just get rid of the word. Just call it bags.
It's bags. It is totally bags.
Bags, bean bag toss.
A reminder to you. look forward to a couple weeks from now on Monday, October 14th, Great Harvest Bread. Cassie's coming in studio and she will bring treats to sample. For those of you who are currently in the field, you're thinking about lunches, well, maybe you want to stop by the Great Harvest Bread Cafe and get something to go. Bread's made fresh every day, sandwiches to go. They bake all sorts of cookies and goodies because you can never have too much in your lunchbox. I mean, those lunchboxes can be empty by 11. Maybe someone's got to go on a parts run and pick up more stuff at Great Harvest Bread. It's an idea.
Yeah, they got some good sandwiches over there, and they pack it all together so nice and tightly. You get a whole box just packed full of sandwiches ready to go. Just give them a call.
The thing I really appreciate is it's handheld stuff. Soups are great, but they're a little tough to do if you're like in the grain cart. But if you can get sandwiches that are good, I mean, it's not just like bologna on Miracle Whip and bread. This is a step up. Take it while you can.
Yes, yes, you can. Hey, we had an email question come in. You can always send us questions or related topics. Send them to our email inboxes. That's weather@flagfamily.com, or you can send them to ag@flagfamily.com. You can also call into during the show at any point in time. 701-293-9000. That studio line is brought to you by Red Wing Shoes. And the email came in from Dan. It was a question on hurricanes and why are there never any hurricanes on the West Coast? And while you can get some hurricanes off the West Coast of Mexico, very rarely do you ever see some form of a depression heading its way up the West Coast. And this is just simply because the water is too cold. The water is way too cold for the formation of hurricanes off the West Coast of the United States.
That's a great point. And I would have asked that same question. So thank you for sharing that.
Appreciate it, Dan. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. So Brad Hyens, Associate Professor of Organic Dairy Management. He's joining us today from University of Minnesota. Brad, how are you?
Doing well. And yourself?
Doing well.
Great. Thank you for joining us through our questions and so forth that come in, and we'll probably have more for you than you expect.
I'm willing to. I don't know if I have all the answers, but I certainly have. I'll give you one.
All right. Well, expert in dairy management. So, how long have you been with University of Minnesota? What is it that your job is a part of? Let's talk about that before we even get to this agrivoltaic. Oh, you're going to have to help me coach me on that word, pasture.
Well, I've been at the University of Minnesota for 14 years, and I'm actually a professor at the West Central Research and Outreach Center here in Morris. So we have a 300-cow grazing dairy. So I'm in charge of research and extension in, you know, grazing production, calves, heifers, forages, genetics, and renewable energy. I dabble in that. So I kind of do a lot of things related to dairy management.
Wow. Wait, that's a perfect crossover as to why you're putting solar panels in a pasture. Want to tell us more?
I agree. So we started this about 7 years ago, and agrivoltaics, it's kind of a mouthful to say, but that's the sort of co-location of solar energy production and livestock. So I had the idea to put cows underneath solar panels about 7-8 years ago, and we've been doing it ever since.
So in doing that, your plan here is simply because it's double utilization of the land, correct?
Right. So solar panels, you can see them all over the Midwest, and sometimes they take up good, valuable agriculture land. And my goal is to sort of be able to utilize that land for many different aspects. So you can still produce solar energy, but you can still use that land for production agriculture, and you're not taking it out of production.
Here's a question for you. Solar panels, they they produce a lot of heat because they're so dark. They absorb a lot of the sunlight, sun. Obviously you get shade underneath them, which can cause cooling. But do you ever run into a situation where the solar panels are actually heating an area up more than the shade that's underneath them because of, well, just how hot they get in general when they're in the sun?
Actually, we haven't, you know, we've sort of studied that. We put a bunch of sensors underneath our solar panels, and it stays pretty cool underneath, and that's why the cows like to go underneath and, you know, utilize that for shade. It also, you know, prevents evaporation of water from the ground. So actually the grass grows much better underneath the solar panels where there's shade.
Right. And to my understanding, there's a wavelength of the light that's actually able to to go through some of these different solar panel components. Is that true, that there's actually some wavelength that's going through the panels and still able to get absorbed from vegetation underneath?
Yeah, the technology today is bifacial solar panels. So you're able to collect that solar radiation from both sides of the panel. So there is some reflectance off the ground back up to the backside of the panel that can capture the energy as well. So there's a little bit that gets through, but for the most part, it's collecting from the side that's facing the sun.
Okay. There's going to be a lot more questions for you, Brad, and especially about how much power you're producing, and are you making your own barn self-sufficient, etc. But we want to continue that conversation with you after we touch on our bottom of the hour news. So stick with us. We are visiting with Brad Hines. Again, he is an associate professor of organic dairy management. We're talking about essentially solar panels and cows over there at the University of Minnesota. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And so much appreciate that you're here. You're maybe in a combine today. Might be doing a little ditching work because it's dry out. And if you are, I'm sure that you're considering someone like Ellingson Drainage to be a part of your plans if you need to be putting in some drain tile or doing some other large-scale projects. In fact, we just had Levi from Ellingson on with us last week, and he did a great job of explaining some of the things that happen in county, township, state governments, et cetera, and how we get water management accomplished. And he called me over the weekend because he's interested in doing something like that again with us. So keep those questions coming in for Ellingson Drainage. Reach out to them with your questions as well. And Justin, we are so close to our corn plot for Here We Grow coming off the field. In fact, The soybeans right next to it are being combined today. So really? Won't be long now. Wow, yes. So our Dairyland corn is very soon to be taken off the field, hauled in for harvest. And I think we're going to be in great shape as far as both test weight and moisture. We will have a video that you and I did out in the field coming out hopefully this week to explain what that looks like. It's a good start.
Indeed we will.
All right. We are joined today by Brad Hines. He is Associate Professor of Organic Dairy Management with the University of Minnesota at Morris. All right. So, Brad, question that I had as I was reading through some of the background on this whole project. First thing is, how did it start? Who had the idea that, you know what, we got cows on pasture. How about we put up some solar panels?
Well, it started a long time ago. We really first started with monitoring the energy loads on our dairy farm at Morris to figure out, you know, we put sensors on every motor, every light switch, just to know what the energy usage was. And our goal is to electrify our dairy farm. So no natural gas. We want to be able to produce our own energy to, you know, power our milking parlor to milk cows. And so for us, the logical step was to get solar energy. And in Minnesota, there were some farmers and others that were grazing sheep underneath solar. And, you know, sheep is not a very big industry in Minnesota. And we have a lot more cows, dairy cows and beef cows. So that's where I sort of had the idea, well, if people can put sheep underneath solar panels, why can't I put cows underneath? So that's sort of, so we just put up a solar installation and put our cows under it with not really knowing what we were doing.
That's actually quite perfect, because good news, cows don't climb like goats. So I'd say this was a win for you.
Exactly. It definitely was. It worked really well.
So to that extent, Brad, are your solar panels completely supplying the power for your dairy operation, or what percentage, et cetera?
No, we're not there yet. We've incorporated some other technologies. We're probably about 80% sort of net zero, as we call it. So we're not quite there yet, but we have some new projects coming along next year where we're going to put some more solar panels up in our pasture, and hopefully we'll get to that point.
I got one in terms of the economic side of this. When it comes to solar panels, a lot of people don't look further into it or really further up with solar because of just the cost of a solar panel, yet alone the cost of how many solar panels you're going to need to reach that either 100% or 50% electricity production. How does that hit your guys' operation and the upfront cost of production of these solar panels to make it worth what you're trying to accomplish?
Well, you know, the upfront costs are actually, you know, they're high. We know that, you know, the federal government has some tax incentives as well to put up solar panels. But, you know, you have to think about it from a 25 or 30 year, you know, time frame. If you put up solar panels today, they're going to last, you know, 30 years plus. You know, we don't know how long they could last, but a long time. So really, when you think about it over the term of the panels, the cost is actually quite economical compared to, you know, natural gas swings a lot, diesel fuel is up and down. So, you know, and the sun's always shining in the Midwest. So even in the wintertime, yeah, we produce a little bit less, but we still produce energy in the wintertime as well from the solar panels.
Sure. And have you guys ran numbers to what that return on investment would be? How many years after installation that you'd start seeing that money flowing back into your pocket from the solar's production?
Usually, you know, our return on investment, at least for a farm our size that's producing, you know, using a lot of energy, it's about 5 to 7 years would be sort of return on investment. So it's actually not as long as what you think it might be.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, 'cause there is a big upfront cost to a solar system for farmers.
Sure.
Brad, how do you install? I'm going to guess this isn't just sitting on some T-posts out in the pasture. This was probably a fairly massive project. And what was kind of some of the infrastructure that went along with it?
Right. So, you know, we have a solar developer that comes in, install these. These are our H braces. So they pound them in about 6 feet into the ground. That's all we do. And you have a sort of racking system that holds the solar panels. And you know, and then you tie them together, wire them together, and that's it. There's not a lot to the installation. You know, obviously, you also have to have power inverters to be able to put the electricity on the grid. So that's, you know, a certain cost as well to do that. But really, there's pretty minimal installation for solar panels in our pasture.
Okay, I got a couple follow-ups on this, Bridget, if I can sneak in here. You said you'd put the power back on the grid. I was going to lead into one of my questions is where is the power going after it's created from solar? Do you have a battery set up on the farm where you store it for the nights or days that are on low production? Or does it just go straight back down the wire and you guys get a credit from the power company that services your area?
For those in our pastures, they are on our side of the transformer, so we actually use all of that power for, you know, our egg production facilities. You know, we also have swine and we have a feed mill, and we use a lot of electricity during the day and into the evening. So we keep the power and utilize it all ourselves. However, they still have to be tied to the grid just in case, you know, we're not producing solar energy or the sun is not very bright that day. We still need to get, you know, some of our electricity from the grid. So they're tied to the grid, but we don't send any power back to the grid just because we utilize it all ourselves.
I see. And then my second one is kind of an in-between from the solar panels to where they're going. Is there any special procedures or things you have to do with the cords or wires so that way you don't have to worry? I don't know if cattle ever get into them or if they gnaw on it or if it's really even available for them to do so. I guess it would just more or less lead into, does the cattle or the dairy cows, do they do any damage to the poles or the structures at all or the wires?
You know, our panels and our systems are about 6 feet off the ground, so the wires are a little bit higher, so the wires are kind of out of the way from the cows, so the cows really aren't able to, you know, reach up and grab them with their mouths or lick on them, anything like that. The wire that goes to the inverters, you know, goes down the pole and underground, so we have our solar inverters on the outside of the fence. Just to prevent any cows from bothering those. So really a lot of the wires are hidden away from cows to do any sort of damage. And they really don't anyways. We haven't seen them sort of, have any behavior that would sort of damage the solar panels at all.
Cows aren't that curious, right? They're just kind of placid. That doesn't really bother them. Whereas some other species like goats and sheep, well, they're going to chew on something till they manage to zap themselves, is my guess.
Right. They would chew on it. You know, the cows, they're curious. When we first put them out there, you know, they were curious and they might rub up against a pole for 5 or 10 seconds, but really they're not really bothering the panels or looking to chew on wires or anything like that.
We got another email question and I have a couple more for you too, Brad. One of them, how do solar arrays handle hail? Are they built to be hail resistant? Do you have to get them insured?
They do handle hail, small hailstones, it's no problem. Obviously, if you're getting, golf ball or softball size hail, it's going to do damage to them. They do damage to anything. So that's a concern, yes. Insuring them would be a good option because you don't want to destroy your, solar system and then you have no way to replace it. So that is certainly a positive there. But they can withstand some hail. They can withstand, our panels withstood a 90 mile an hour, straight line wind a couple of years ago. So, we haven't had any issues there.
Kind of tying back to what Justin asked about, cows, if they get curious and chew on things, like those squirrels in my yard that are busy chewing on anything they can find, including my mini pumpkins. Stray voltage. As a kid who grew up in a dairy barn in the 80s, that was something we heard about, was stray voltage. So does it become more or less of a concern or really no change in a level of concern for stray voltage when you're working with solar panels like this? Maybe you have to explain stray voltage. I'm not sure if you're the right guy for that, but that might help too.
I do know about stray voltage. A lot of it has to do with loose wires or, a lot comes in two-phase power systems. Stray voltage is a whole different topic. But no, we don't really worry about stray voltage in our solar systems. They're very well grounded, new wiring, not a lot of wiring, that's underground or causing problems. We've measured voltage and we haven't seen any in our systems.
Brad, you've handled this whole rapid fire Q&A really, really well, but just one more. Are there more farms that are looking at solar power in the way that you've installed it, especially some of these larger size dairies? Are they finding this an efficient opportunity for them to be more effective economically?
Yes, they are. There's a lot of livestock farms that are looking into solar systems, whether they want to put it, in their pasture, some want to put it on their barns as a way to sort of reduce their, electricity bill. And it's coming there, We're also working with some farmers that are growing it in a cornfield. So, there's also opportunities for crop producers to put solar in their farm fields as well. So it's a different thought process, but it's coming as well.
You guys are pretty innovative down there at University of Minnesota Morris. You also have two wind turbines. How long have you been using those in conjunction with the operation?
The first wind turbine went up in 2008, and the other one went up in 2012, I think. And that supplies all of the about 80% of the power to the University of Minnesota Morris campus. So that does not get used on any of the farm production side.
There's been a lot going on down there. So Brad, for folks who want to hear more or investigate some of the options and ideas that you have, whether it's with solar and wind energy, how can they reach out to all of you folks down there at Morris?
Probably the easiest is to look on our website, you know, the University of Minnesota West Central Research and Outreach Center. It lists all of our contact information. You can come here for a tour. We're happy to show farmers, industry people, all of our solar installations and our renewable energy program and with our livestock. So, you know, we welcome any visitors to come and learn more about what we're doing.
Thank you, Brad. We really appreciate you taking the time to visit with us today and hope the rest of your afternoon goes fantastic.
Yep. Thank you. Have a great day.
Yep. You too, Brad. Appreciate it.
All right, folks. Weather and headlines still to come. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back.
And welcome back to the program. Thanks for rejoining us. It is 1:51 on this Monday afternoon. And you're listening to Weather and Ag in Focus. I'm meteorologist Justin Storm and Ag Director Bridget Riedel still with me. And, well, still no update on Dean. He is still somewhere off the beaten path, somewhere on the outskirts of Sedona.
Probably stuck on a cactus somewhere. Sorry, Dean. Best of luck. Hope you're on first aid kit.
He put a picture up earlier this morning, and then I haven't heard anything from him. And, of course, yes, a typical Dean post. It was about a cactus.
He just has specific things he wants to talk about. So there it is.
He just wants to share his thoughts and, you know, he shared them. I think he got the message across.
So well, is it still that hot down there as it is? I mean, it's cooling off here. Is it still hot as Blue Blazes down there for him or how's that going?
Yeah. Why don't we take a quick look and see what old Phoenix is registering?
If we're going to have a, if we're going to have a co-host missing, at the very least, we should know what the weather looks like.
Let's see. Here we go. It is currently, that's nothing. It's 100 degrees. It's actually quite humid
easy.
In Arizona right now. Wow.
Easy.
Dew point of 49. Interesting.
He's going to be horrified.
How is
that
even possible? So they actually have like no wind right now. The air temperature is 100 degrees, but their heat index is 96. I guess it's just that dry heat. It's different.
I don't understand the weather there. But anywho, how's ours?
They're shooting for a high of 105 today, 109 tomorrow. And then they stay in the 100s for the rest of the week. And they're basically stuck with a never going away excessive heat warning for the entire week as well. Mm. Overnight lows are pretty good. Upper 70s and low 80s. Beautiful weather out there in Phoenix. I wish we had that kind of weather here.
Many of our snowbirds will be heading there very soon.
Yes, they will. If you're going to be flying, you're going to get a good push today. It's pretty windy out there, gusting upwards of 50 here in our area, but it's for the most part, it's mostly sunny, some mid-upper level clouds filtering out a little bit of the sunshine, and temperatures are sitting, well, not at 100 degrees, but at a pretty balmy 68, which is still above average for this time of year. Your average daytime high is 65. We will see more days closer to average as we head throughout this week, though. Tonight, the winds do lighten up. Our wind advisory will expire at 7 o'clock. Our red flag warning for today will expire at 9. And then we'll just see breezy and cool conditions tonight, down to the mid-40s. We'll bounce back to the mid, a couple upper 60s for Tuesday afternoon. Partly cloudy tomorrow, another nice day. West winds around 10 to 25 miles per hour. And we'll see the wind, or I should just say breezy conditions, lasting into Wednesday. Partly cloudy to mostly sunny, low to mid-70s. Back to the mid-60s on Thursday, and right around 70 on Friday. And the wind does come back over the weekend, so we'll probably be dealing with more gusts in that 30 to 45 mile per hour range on Saturday, Bridget.
All right, so there's going to be a lot to pay attention to and to look forward to, especially when it's windy days. Keep your hats on tight. And also, I realize that when it's hot and dry like this, and even though the temperatures are going to cool down, we're still very dry, and our fire index is up in a number of places. We have farmers that are planning ahead by having water trailers that are full of water and on the standby just in case a spark does cause a fire out in the field. And also tillage tools are hooked up just in case you've got to plow a fire break. So those things can happen. Nobody wants them to happen, but indeed that can be part of harvest in conditions such as we have right now.
Yeah, definitely can. And that is partially the reason why that red flag warning is in effect for a lot of the area. It doesn't include the Northern Valley or the northern half of North Dakota, but, you know, a couple counties north of that South Dakota border, southwestern North Dakota. It's too many directions up here. Who thought to call every state north, south, and northwest? And portions of Montana. Yeah, darn it, Carolina. But anywhere from portions of Wisconsin, all right, let's just end the day. Montana down to South Dakota, back north into Minnesota. Red flag warnings for the rest of the day. Wind advisories everybody. For everybody else. Bridget, what did you do this weekend? Did you have any fun? Did you do anything exciting?
I think I finally have all my tomatoes canned into spaghetti sauce. I feel like there's still a load out there that can probably become a salsa of some sorts, but we're here. Do you need jalapenos, my friend? I could help you with those.
You know, I don't actually think I need any jalapenos. I planted some. The weirdest thing.
Yes.
So I planted jalapenos, and I labeled jalapenos on my little stick and my little pot that I start my plants in by seed. And it grew into a little tiny jalapeno plant, and I planted it outside, and it grew into a big jalapeno plant. But it didn't produce jalapenos. It produced thunderbolt peppers. So I'm very confused how my jalapeno transformed into a different pepper altogether. But no, I don't need any.
This is not surprising. Sometimes Mother Nature brings you surprises. I do want to make sure we get to one of our headlines today, and that was we are seeing that a lot of military folks have generally come from the rural areas. In fact, about 44% of the military comes from lower population states. What we have now found is that the military is indicating they can't meet their recruiting goals. They are seeing far less people in the Army, Navy, and Air Force that are coming in, and they are noticing considerably that those numbers are down from our rural populations. No doubt we probably have some decline in some of those areas and overall population that affects those numbers, but generally speaking, I was surprised it was that was the percentage, and it was 44% of the military normally comes from rural areas, and not so much these days.
Interesting.
Yeah, a little change there. But as we get ready to for tomorrow, let's all remember to stay out of the wind as much as we can, keep those fire potentials down, and be prepared just in case. We don't want to see any more combine fires. I've already had a notification of at least a couple out there. So knock on wood, just don't let them happen to you.
Just remember to wipe off the manifold. And then you're usually
wipe
good
off
to go.
Everything.
Yep, just blow wipe it off. Get the leaf blower out. Get the old Milwaukee, DeWalt, Ryobi. Anyways, we're out of here. See you later. Bye.